Many of you are accustomed to seeing me up here, though don't know much about me outside of this context. So today I thought I would share some of my story with you. Though I am comfortable speaking in front of a crowd or singing or dancing, I mostly consider myself an ambivert, somewhere in between an introvert and an extrovert. I relish quietness and time alone and prefer sharing my thoughts in one-on-one conversations or in very small groups. When John Bear Mitchell was here a few months ago, he spoke of the importance of telling our stories. His story inspired me to do so. I'm going to give you little snippets of my religious roots or spiritual journey and how they have carried me into the present. Here goes. My father was a devout Roman Catholic, and my mother was Lutheran. So until the age of 7, I went to both churches and to Sunday school at the Lutheran church. I did love going to Sunday school. I liked the children's Bible stories and the activities that we would do related to those stories. As for the Catholic Church, I did like hearing and speaking in Latin until the Second Vatican Council changed that, and I was intrigued by many of the rituals. I thought it curious that the Catholic Church didn't tell many Bible stories. At that time, I preferred the Lutheran Church because Mom always brought me snacks that I could eat in the pew. When I was 7 years old, the so-called age of reason, I was enrolled in Catholic school, and so I no longer went to the Lutheran church. My second grade teacher, Sister Anne, made an impression on me that I relish to this day. Sister Anne had responsibilities that she was supposed to carry out before school started. On one day, she forgot to do that, so she took the whole class over to the sanctuary in the church so she could do her duty. When you enter a Catholic church, one is supposed to genuflect and cross yourself. Sister Anne did neither of these. She ran across the sanctuary, waved her hand madly, and said, "Hi, God." A big smile came across my face. I liked that casual, personal relationship with the deity and do so to this day. I saw my father tithe to the church, so at age 5, I started tithing, taking a dime from my 8 o'clock coffee tin and put it in the basket each week. My parents had a high 4-poster bed. Each morning, I would go into their room and whisper to my mother that I was hungry. Normally, she would say, "Give me 5 minutes." I would wait maybe 30 seconds and repeat my plea. Meanwhile, my father was on the other side of the bed, kneeling, and he was either praying or reading from Imitation of Christ or saying his rosary. I still carry that image of him in my heart. I was in 5th grade when I was confirmed. We had moved states from Pennsylvania to Indiana. At St. Bernard's in Pennsylvania, one was confirmed in 5th grade, and at St. Gabriel's in Indiana, your confirmation happened in 2nd grade. So I felt very awkward being so tall among these little 2nd graders, and they were all dressed in white, like it was the first Holy Communion, I don't know why. And I was dressed in a dress that my Lutheran mother decided to give me, which was kind of a felt gold copper color skirt and vest and a white blouse. So I also felt like I stood out because of that too. My Lutheran mother, Margaret, thought I could pick Melissa for my confirmation name because you always choose a name. Little did she know that it was supposed to be a name of a saint. I thought, why not? She was a saint to me. Well, when the bishop came to me as I knelt at the altar and asked for my confirmation name, and I said, "Melissa," he looked at me very strangely. But he still gave me a blessing. I guess he hadn't met my mother yet. In eighth grade, I began pondering the idea of becoming a nun. My Lutheran mother went along with exploring this idea and took me to a convent to find out what it would entail to become a novitiate. After the tour, I was still interested, but decided to delay that idea until after high school. Eventually, I decided not to go that route. My mother, bless her, was relieved. Come to find out, the biggest issue with the idea for her was that she didn't want my hair to be covered up. Back then, you know, they still wore a full wimple and veil, and I would have not shown my hair. Moving along to high school, by now my family had moved to Houston, Texas, as my father was transferred there. In my last year in high school, I took a world religions class. At one point, three members of the Inner City Episcopal Church of Houston came to speak about their communal lifestyle that had grown up around the congregation. The leaders of the church found that there were many needy people in the area. Many folks were great when they were at church and involved in activities there, but when they returned to their troubled lives, havoc would ensue. To put it simply, that is what began the radically progressive communal lifestyle of that church, the Church of the Redeemer. So-called stable and healthy families would invite troubled people to join them as part of their family. All of the households shared a common purse and made decisions together. You can imagine the challenges in that. I started going there regularly and was drawn to their way of life. I became part of the Way In Coffee House, which presented music, dance, and drama every weekend in a rundown part of downtown Houston. Many times, people off the streets would walk in and find a lively happening there and people that genuinely cared about them. That is one way that several people became part of the church family. Eventually, I went to college at Ottawa University and soon realized I missed the life of the community so much that I transferred back to Houston and attended University of St. Thomas. Eventually, I moved into one of the community houses of the church while still attending college. I was in the choir at church, where I began getting ideas or visions of dances that would go with some of the songs. Up until then, the only dances that were done as part of the service were Israeli-type folk dances. I began doing solo interpretive dance to some of the songs and also got others to create dances with me. In one of the plays we did, I did an interpretive dance depicting Jonah inside the whale. About this time, in 1971, the church was asked to bring a group of people to Coventry, England, to live and demonstrate our way of life. Several of us were asked to join the traveling segment of the community called the Fisher Folk. The Fisher Folk conducted creative art workshops and led worship, and we were asked to do this at the Nottingham Conference. The Nottingham Conference is an international conference of Anglican and Episcopal churches. The Fisher Folk were asked to come for 6 weeks to join the community of celebration. Well, that 6 weeks turned out to be 10 years in England and Scotland for me. The Fisher Folk traveled all over England, Scotland, Germany, Australia, Sweden, leading creative art workshops in churches and colleges. One highlight that I love to remember is when the Fisher Folk led the worship at the World Council of Churches in 1975 in London. At the last Eucharist, Desmond Tutu celebrated, and I was sharing an African dance to one of the Fisher Folk songs. All of a sudden, Desmond Tutu came and joined me in the dance. My heart grows large whenever I think of that. He was an amazing man. Other folks that crossed our paths and joined in activities of the community were Daniel Berrigan, a Jesuit priest, author, poet, and peace activist, Jim Wallace of the Sojourners community here in the United States in Washington, D.C., came to live with us for a while in Scotland. And Sojourners community became a sister community of ours. Perhaps some of you have heard of Sojourners magazine. Sojourners is a progressive monthly magazine of the American social justice movement. Sojourners was very influential in the community of Celebration's social justice activities. After living in Coventry, our community moved to Wargrave, England, and we lived at Yeldall Manor, a very large mansion. It originally was a family home called Ye Old Hall, and then became a home for nuns that made priests' vestments with intricate embroidery. The community of Celebration was given the opportunity to live there when the nuns had all died. Before the whole community moved in, four women, including myself, were sent to clean and organize the place. We found many nuns' habits, and I decided to wear one while cleaning because it protected me from all the dust that we were stirring up. Actually, the real reason was for me to hearken back to my youthful dream of becoming a nun. One day, the caretaker who lived in the carriage house came knocking on the door, and I opened it, not remembering that I had the nun's habit on. He looked stunned, as if one of the nuns had come back to life. After a few years, half of the community moved to the Cathedral of the Isles on the Isle of Cambrai on the west coast of Scotland. The community purchased the local bakery, and four of us went to Glasgow College of Food Technology and apprenticed under the two Scottish bakers that remained. This was one of the main ways we financially supported the life of the community at that time. In 1976, the Fisher Folk performed in the Edinburgh Festival, performing a musical that we wrote collectively. The community had a spiritual advisor named Brother Roland Walls, who had been a dom at Cambridge University. He decided he was done with that and started a small community of his own, named the Community of Transfiguration, just outside of Edinburgh in a little town named Roslyn. He became a wise and humorous spiritual advisor to our community. One time I visited him and attended chapel in a hut behind their house. Everyone was pious and serious in the chapel. Upon coming out of the chapel, I noticed that Roland had oversized clown shoes on. When he noticed me looking at him, he burst into laughter. From there, we went into dinner. Once again, during the blessing, everyone was polite and pious. As soon as the amen was said, hell broke loose as the monks reached and grabbed for all the food choices. Roland said, "You better dig in, Margie, or you won't get anything." Again, my boxed ideas of practices of a religious order were expanded. Pat Allen, a member of our community of Celebration, decided she wanted to have a more contemplative lifestyle. Eventually, she did move into the community of Transfiguration, where Brother Roland was. She moved out of the flat that she shared with others in our community into one of the monks' huts on the property. She designed days of quiet retreats with plenty of reading material, like Thomas Merton and others, and silently left food for us at the door. This was quite a welcome blessing and retreat from our busy community life. I could go on and on about this chapter of my life, but I will stop here and show you a song that one of our members wrote called Celebration, about celebrating the joys and the sorrows of life. You might be able to recognize me in three of the scenes. It is 1970s, so it needs to be a little louder.
Together we celebrate life that lasts forever. We celebrate for the joy and for the sorrow. Yesterday, today, tomorrow.
There was a fire at the cathedral. His guitar burnt.
great creation we celebrate. For our own salvation we celebrate. For the sun and for the rain, through the joy and through the pain, we celebrate.
He had a farm. So that was a little representation of what I used to do. After that long and formative chapter in my life, I returned to the USA primarily to finish my Bachelor in Science of Nursing at the University of Texas Medical Branch in Galveston, Texas. My first full-time position as a nurse was at Shriners Burns Institute. This was quite a challenge for me to see the children, what they had to go through. Several of the cases we had were abuse cases. I was challenged to address the families of these expected abuse cases with an open mind and heart. In addition to the practical nursing care, I felt a spiritual commitment to these young lives. I also faced challenges in my personal life from heartbreak. My husband of 14 years was unable to have children and ultimately decided that we should separate. We are still friends. To date, this is the hardest thing that I have gone through. In the long run, this brought a deepened tenderness to my heart and soul and an awakened consciousness to the struggles in life. As Pema Chodron would say, suffering is inevitable. New joys found me too in unexpected ways, including my marriage to Bill Burford and the birth of our twin sons, Graham and Gabe. Moves kept happening, first for 19 years in Sag Harbor on Long Island, New York, where we raised our children and sent them off to college. My parents also came to live with us, my father for 2 years until he died, and my mother was there for 12 years until she died at 98 and a half. I continued my vocation as a nurse and Bill as a theater director and professor. My sons were 6 when we moved there. My sons and I visited 4 churches to see what they were all about. I left the decision to Gabe and Graham as to where we might attend. They decided on Christ Episcopal Church, I think mostly because some kids from their kindergarten class were there. We attended happily there until I wanted a broader perspective for myself, my husband, who's not an organizational religions guy, and for our sons to choose their own values and beliefs. That is when we started going to the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of the South Fork of Long Island. At that time, Reverend Allison Cornish was the minister there. Some of you may remember her from a Zoom service she did for us here at UUCB during COVID. She was followed by Reverend Kimberly Quinn Johnson, who gave the charge to the minister here at Reverend Amy's installation. You may be wondering, how did I get to Belfast? From the year 2000, I was a nurse in the summers for 10 years at Hidden Valley Camp in Montville, Maine. Our sons were campers there and eventually became counselors in training. I knew from that first summer that I wanted to end up in Maine. Every year, we would come to Maine two or three times after that. I was also interested in co-housing and learned that the Belfast Eco Village was beginning to form here. The Christmas of 2014, we were here in Maine on vacation, and we came to the UUCB for the Christmas Eve service. You were still downstairs then. And also, that same year, we went to a meal here for during New Year's by the Bay. And you were serving dinner downstairs, and I heard Jeffrey Mabee talking about the Eco Village. And so I sort of snuck over there and said, can I ask you some questions? And that resulted in the next day, January 1st, we went to Jeffrey and Judith's house, and we became exploring members of the Eco Village. And then in 2019, we moved into the Eco Village, and we're still there. Soon thereafter, I met Reverend Amy and became a regular member of this fine community that I am so blessed to be a part of. I like to think about the threads that brought me here, the thread of seeing my father kneeling at his bedside, praying, and my hermit friend Pat Allen carry me through to my daily prayer and meditation practice each morning. My progressive community in Texas, England, and Scotland are now the fiber of my involvement in this church and the Eco Village. The thread of ministers, Reverend Allison, Reverend Kimberly, Reverend Amy. I continue to sing with the UUCB choir and the Bagaduce Community Chorus. I'm still dancing with Shana Bloomstein and Molly Galler. The community of celebration meets monthly on Zoom, and we continue to see each other in person for important life events. In fact, this August, there are plans for us to gather on the Isle of Cumbrae, Scotland, to honor our connection. I even like to imagine threads from my life going forward into my son's lives. My son Graham is a compassionate, advanced EMT and an avid protector of nature. And my son Gabe is an interfaith chaplain, active in climate action, creating communities of belonging, and a practice meditator. Life is real, and life is earnest, and life is full of grace and mercy. I encourage you all to see the threads in your life's tapestry and encourage you to share them with us. Thank you for listening.